are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Wee. Hit the light stool.
Guten Tag and Guten Abend. Welcome into the Fundamentalist Podcast, the best metal podcast from the worst metal town. As you may have ascertained, I am your host, dual guest, and joining me in our continuing curation of an atmosphere of general distaste and indecency, we have Peter Bog.
Sup?
And Richard Donahue.
Hello.
On this episode, we're going to be having the return of Covers Worth Covering, this time focused around Kiss and their almighty, or is it, track, God of Thunder.
We'll also
have the return of our newest segment, Mordor Metal Monthly, this time focusing on the band Orcrist. We'll also have what we have been listening to and the finest acts of bullshittery from yours truly. All this and more on the Fundamentalists Podcast. So, loyal listeners, you may remember that my New Year's resolution this year was to listen to more death metal, as I felt that my listening habits had become too black metal oriented in the last 2 or 3 years, that I was missing out on the finer things when it came to the world of death metal, that only the releases that were fed to me were really getting through to me, and that really bothered me. And so so far this year, we've already done Under the Knife Death. We've already reviewed Werewolves and Asphyx, with more death metal releases to be put out. So this may be about the point in time where you expect me to pontificate about some other death metal release that I've been digging on. But no, actually, this is me about to totally flip the script and put Richard Donahue firmly in the crosshairs and ask, what the fuck have you been doing as far as your New Year's resolution went on the podcast, Richard? What black metal have you been listening to?
As far as black metal, an album I discovered last year, Occultus Profano, the album Accursed Possession.
Profano or Profano?
From Cultus LA. Profanum? Yes, Occultus Profano. It features the drummer of Sadistic Intent, and who apparently were actually a Jeff Becerra of Possession's backing band for like 5 years till there was some situation caused them to break apart. But this is a two-piece,
a distinct lack of cash.
Probably. As it turns out, I didn't realize until afterwards, a female vocalist, guitar player, and bass player. So not that that matters, but really good stuff. It says that 90s... black metal, you know, down to a science, with the cold atmosphere and the viciousness, the tremolo picking, the whole shebang.
But are they anywhere near the level of Noctuary?
I've never heard Noctuary, so I couldn't put a comparison to that. As well as another black metal EP, one I purchased recently, was the Hellhammer Apocalyptic Raids EP, which is one of the formative EPs of the genre as a whole. And it sounds like dog shit. V. Santora of Triptychon and Dark Fortress Remastered. So it does sound a lot better than when it came out in 83. But it's a really cool perspective to see where the genre started with that Merciful Fate, Venom, to where it's at now, where you have the
Ovid. Richard, my question is, did they record it on a boombox with a towel thrown over it? In 1983, it seems like
they recorded
the peak
through
of recording
box,
technology.
The towel, I'm uncertain of. To be honest with you.
Honestly, the uncertainty makes it even more cult.
Probably, but it wasn't a towel.
It was more of a funeral shroud.
Of hate. But Cultus Profano's Accursed Possession,
of the
which almost
shroud,
made
whether it be of hate, grief, or overall melancholy, could not be determined.
Indeed. Which I highly recommend if you don't want some awesome 90s sounding black metal, and Hellhammer's Apocalyptic Raids EP. Check that shit out.
Righteous. Moving on into what we've all been listening to, really. I'm going to move the microphone away from Cletus Dick over here and put it firmly in front of Mr. Bog, Lord
the
Petrovich, spitter of hot takes. What have you been listening to?
All right, I was led by the algorithm this week, you guys. So I jumped into a user-generated Funeral Doom playlist off of YouTube Music, and I was served downstream from 2016
Tell
by a band
more, Mr. Eck.
Colt Somm. Eck is from Spotify, all right? Let's get our tech giants straight here. We all have to claim our
that's
God.
That's right. You're an Eric Schmidt from Alphabet Guy.
Yeah, correct. Thank you for getting it straight.
Quantity, quantity, quantity. Sorry, continue.
Now that we have the, now that we have that clarified, Goat Psalm, Russian Funeral Doom. I say that with the uptake there because this is firmly flirting with post-metal, in my opinion. Super atmospheric. They do not shy away from playing with soundscape. And there are a lot of instrumental inclusions that you do not see in metal very often, including tribal drums, which I would say is probably one of the most common. I think that we're all thinking about that certain Sepultura record, which is known for all of the clanging
Wrong
and banging.
Reasons.
Yeah.
Russian Funeral Doom. Do they play vodka?
I expect that that's probably true. Although that's, vodka is really more of a Polish thing, but
artful
the,
instrumentation
fifth
of
unknown
a vodka
member of the band is vodka.
Yeah. Couple of other ones apart from tribal drums is they have sort of, I'm going to call it sort of native flutes, which certainly, you know, come up from time to time and potentially in this climate of political correctness could be seen as a little bit contentious. And then the most interesting part of this is actually the mouth harp, which I definitely think it associate with sort of Appalachian bluegrass music, like twang, 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 twang.
So,
never
like
in my
harmonica?
Life. It's not a harmonica.
They're
it's
not harmonica.
It's,
okay. All right.
Sometime called a Jew's harp, which is a politically incorrect name. Mouth harp is something that I've seen it called more
mouth
recently.
Harp.
But yeah, it's something that you don't see in metal a whole lot, which certainly makes us a little bit of a standout. I think that the guitars and the bass are used more of in a percussive manner in this one, keeping the tempos and sort of grinding out a little bit of an atmospheric down-tuned rhythm. And keyboards really play a lot of the up note melodic aspects as well as the vocals, which again is not something that you'd necessarily expect from a band that calls itself Funeral Doom. So I don't know. This one was a pretty interesting listen. I actually gave it two full listens through, and considering it's over an hour, that was generous of me. So if you are interested in trying to get into some unseen progressive Funeral Doom, then check out Downstream from Goat Psalm. They are not on YouTube Music, potentially on Spotify, but you can certainly find them on Bandcamp, Goat, P-S-A-L-M.
It's funny you mentioned percussive guitar instrumentation, because my first inclination whenever I hear someone describe the music in that way is nu metal.
Yes. Where we all got our metalheads got their start.
Could have been the evolution of Damage Plan had they persisted. Who knows? Who knows? We could have seen Goat Psalm and Dime on the same bill. It's entirely possible.
I'm pretty sure your average Pantera fan would not be into a 20-minute song. Just saying.
All right. So secondarily, the algorithm served me a track called Under Ruins from a band called Nervosa off of their new album Perpetual Chaos. And so I listened to a good bit of that and said it was kind of fun, black and thrash metal. I went back and looked into it and found out that this is actually an all-female group from Brazil. And in 2020, they went through a fairly significant lineup change in which they brought on a woman called Diva Satanica as their new vocalist. And Prika Amaral, who is the lead guitar player, remains the only founding member. And she plays a Kramer guitar, which I think is pretty cool. It's got like the old school neck, so I don't know if that's one potentially she built herself or if maybe it's a reissue if Kramer realizes that everybody wants that hockey stick head or not. But that's a little bit of an aside. In the past, we were chatting in the Slack channel, and they do a series called Slay at Home. And it's musicians from various bands covering, songs remotely and putting it out as content for metalheads in the pandemic. And one of the songs that we looked at recently was a cover of Death's Trapped in a Corner off of my top 10 Death tracks, as well as from the Individual Thought Patterns masterpiece record that they put out. And
goddamn right.
It features the drummer from Gorguts and Kralis, the bass player from the Black Dahlia Murder, the guitar player from Voivod, and then it features Diva Satanica from Nervosa, and I think she's also in a band called Bloodhunter. I didn't know this band when I watched that cover, but I did comment to myself that I thought she did a pretty decent job. I was a fan of her vocal stylings,
yes,
by and large,
well.
And I think that that persists onto this record, as well as Prika certainly seems to know what she's doing on the fretboard. So I would say if you want to go ahead and take a shot at that as well, Perpetual Chaos is probably about as good as any Amon Amarth record I've ever heard in my life, which, depending
on
how you feel about that.
Don't you dare insult the great name of Amon Amarth on this podcast, sir.
Well, it depends on it. If it's an insult to you, then...
Did you say that Nervosa's riffing is better than any, or as good as any Amon Amarth record you've ever heard in your life?
Hear, hear.
You haven't listened to the right Amon Amarth records.
Obviously. Obviously.
So anyways, a couple of standout tracks, just to give you an entry point on that one. You certainly could listen to Under Ruins, the final track on Perpetual Chaos. I also was a fan of Theory of Conspiracy, number two, and then Guerrera Santa, which I'm not quite sure what the lyrical content that one's about, but musical-wise, it was a tasty offering. Duel, what do you got for us?
Sounds like a saint-like female terrorist.
Santa Claus is a...
A terrorist?
Yeah, I was going to say a male, but...
So what I've been listening to this week, the new single from Woad, Manchester-based black and death metal outfit. I've talked about them before on the podcast. I'm a big champion of them. Their first record, Death's Edifice, as well as their second, Servants of the Counter Cosmos. Some of my favorite slabs of black and death metal around. Their new single, Vanish Beneath, from their upcoming record, Burn in Many Mirrors, which is a badass album title, I might add. It's due out April 2nd. The single is badass. Gives me some real old school Dark Throne vibes. Their previous releases have had a lot of blast beat heavy songs, but this one, noticeably absent, much more rock and roll, bit of a driving beat, very much a moody black metal, old school vibe, OSBM.
So like a newer Behemoth, say?
No.
Oh,
I'm talking
that's
like...
Good. That's good. That's what's... No. All right, good deal.
Get the fuck out of here.
Testing the waters there, brother.
Vanish Beneath. Whoa, check that shit out. So in researching the band Orcrist for our Mordor Metal Monthly segment, I came across this band called Siebenbürgen, which is the German word for Transylvania. However, this band is from Sweden, Stockholm specifically. You got that? Swedish band. German
much?
Name, Transylvanian translation. Hashtag globalism. They have a primarily blackened power metal, gothic black metal, melodic black metal sound. They've got a lot of albums to chew on, too. So depending on which one you dive into, you might get a sound that leans more heavily in one of those directions. There was two albums in particular that I spent the most time with, and that is Plagued by Thy Angel, as well as Revelation 6. Plagued by Thy Angel has a real heavy industrial black metal vibe, like something you might expect from Samael, which is something I've been actually looking for, more bands that did music similar to Samael.
The mid-era of Rotten Christ has some noticeable industrial elements as well, if that's up your alley.
I'll have to check that out. But Revelation 6 is almost entirely melodic black metal, and that is equally worth checking out. Also, their very first album, I didn't get to dive into it quite as much, Lyria, I believe it's called. The first track, Vampiria. Awesome. Dripping with personality, this band. So check them out, Siebenbürgen. I'll report back with releases or with reports for the other albums as I dive in, I promise. Also, 2 weeks ago, I think I mentioned on the previous release, Matt Havey put out an acoustic 4-song EP from the Ascendancy album that I love so much from Trivium. One of their seminal albums from way back in 2005. He also put out a 4-song EP from The Crusade last week, which I had been jamming super heavily. And then today, we're recording on a Friday, he put out a 6-song, 36-minute acoustic EP of Shogun. I'm pretty sure podcast consensus favorite Trivium album on the pod.
No fucking doubt.
And this EP is just fantastic. The almost classical rendition that is done of Kirasut Gomen, the opener, all the way through to the magnum opus that is the title track, Shogun. He knocks it out of the park on this
fucking
acoustic
great
EP.
Highly recommend. check that shit out.
Glad you got to listen to it as well, Richard. Bog, you should check that shit out.
All right.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, it'll be no Vengeance Falls, but I guess Shogun's okay. I mean,
what is, though, if you think about it?
Heard that.
Lita's dick. What about you?
All right. So I mentioned Cultus Profano earlier. I've been listening to that. And my favorite track off the record would be the second song, Devoted to the Black Horns, Operation 16, which is a 9-minute long atmospheric epic. And we discussed Necroceros last episode. I'm listed that a lot as well. And I forgot to mention that it was mixed and mastered by Sebastian C. Bleverman, who is the guitarist vocalist of killer German power metal band Orden Ogen, who I highly recommend if you're in the mood for some just killer, fantastic power metal. My favorite track currently of Necroceros would definitely be In Blazing Oceans. And going from there, Archgoat's 2015 record, The Apocalyptic Triumphator, which is probably my favorite overall studio release by the band. Next, their last one, The Luciferian Crown.
Also my favorite release. Solid choice there, Richard.
I'm glad we could agree on something, Bog. Makes the world go round.
We're going to work on Death Heaven, but we'll get there one day.
About that. But this is just some solid, evil-ass, black and death metal. It was really hard to pick a overall favorite, but currently it would be track 5, Grand Luciferian Theophany, with a PH, not an F. And another record, which this past week celebrated its 9th anniversary, would be Goat Horse 2012 album, Blood for the Master. I definitely feel this one's a bit overlooked because it came 3 years after the skull-fuckingly awesome Carving Out the Eyes of God, which I must say, probably one of the best album titles in metal as a whole. Carving Out the Eyes of God, just great shit.
That's right to the point, doesn't it?
It's got some of the best Goat Horse tracks on there.
As well, yes.
And Legion, Sion, Wars of Wrath.
This record here, in my opinion, the first 4 tracks are 4 of the best songs the band has ever put out. Track 1, Collapse of Eternal Worth. The second one, we're Steel and Bone Meet, which is Motorhead as Fuck. The third track, Parasitic Scriptures of the Sacred Word. And the fourth one in my top 5 Goat Horse songs of all time, In Deathless Tradition.
Yes, sir.
Which actually
definitely
all,
top 5.
Yeah. All three of those songs, minus Parasitic, are actually still Goat Horse staples to this day, including, though I'm not the biggest fan of it, I believe it's track 5, Judgment of the Bleeding Crown. It's all right. Not their best. But I definitely feel it doesn't get as much attention. I probably recommend you check it out. If I had to pick a favorite, it would honestly be a toss-up between Parasitic or In Deathless Tradition. They're both so good, it's really hard to pick one. It's necessarily better than the other. And the final record I'm listening to this week is not... There is some slight metal elements to it, but overall not a metal record. That would be Coheed and Cambria's second studio record, In Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth. So... My uncle turned me on to this back in 2005 when I was still in high school, which makes me feel old as fuck. But it's one of those few records from that era that still holds up. I can still put it on and have no desire to skip a track or anything.
Claudio's a hell of a guitar player. I mean, his vocal stylings are unmistakable as well.
Oh, you know? For sure. Definitely. A lot of people say he sounds like a knockoff Geddy Lee, and his, like, much like Geddy Lee, his vocals are a deal breaker. Even Billy Corgan's Smash a Pumpkins on the person threw their hat in the ring, and either you love it or you hate it. But I personally very much enjoy it. Though live, I can say he's kind of a mixed bag. He can either be really good or not so much. But if you've never really gotten to Coheed, I'd definitely recommend this one. After their 4th record, No World for Tomorrow, their quality varies wildly, but this was definitely their first full-on, I would call classic album. My favorite song would be the title track, which would be track 2 off the record. And that pretty much wraps up what I've been listening to this week. What's next? Thy Taskmaster Duel.
Well, that'll do it with what we've been listening to. We'll move on into a recurring segment, Covers Worth Covering. This time, it was the responsibility of our very own Peter Bogg to decide which covers were worth covering. So, Bogg, what are we covering?
I took a little inspiration from our Under the Knife look at death and went back to one of the few tracks that they covered, which was God of Thunder from Kiss. And they went ahead and put that out on the deluxe edition of their 1991 release, Human. And I'm quoting our very own Richard Donahue here to say that they made me like Kiss because otherwise I hate that band or something to that effect.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So now there's actually quite a few covers of this exact song. We're lucky this time that we're not just covering a single artist, but we have three different looks at the song God of Thunder by Kiss. And there were other ones as well. We actually had to trim it down from the original 5 or 6 offerings that we looked at. There's also an Entombed version.
Ugh, that one.
And then I think that Melvins even throw their hat in the ring on this one, but we're focusing.
Hey, that Entombed version wasn't nearly as bad as that had any right to be.
Honestly,
it should have been God the fuck awful, but it wasn't.
Vocally, the chorus was fine. It was just the verse part where it just sounds like he's drunkenly rambling to, oh, it's the chorus. Let me do it good this time. Not bad, though.
It's funny you talk about drunken rambling because one of the cover versions that we have listened to today is from none other than White Zombie and Rob's notably drunken vocal stylings, as some people have characterized them
unique
over the years.
Well, that's one thing that Lista this brought up. Like, say what you want about him, though, musically. Musically, his output's very mostly missed. He's very distinct. When you hear his voice, you know it's him, which you can't say a lot nowadays. So props, at least in that one aspect.
It's a good point. So in this White Zombie cover of God of Thunder, I would say that this is the loosest, most interpretive cover of the three that we're going to be looking at, which also include the original Death cover, which I stipulated 2 moments ago, as well as one from Iced Earth. And Rob takes a lot of liberties with the vocal stylings, includes shouting lines over and over again in his sort of characteristic fashion, wailing. There's dubs, which actually also show up in the original. I don't know if y'all took much time to take a look at it, but God of Thunder originally came out on Destroyer, which came out in 1976 and included some very famous tracks, including Detroit Rock City, as well as Beth and Shout It Out Loud. And yet this seems to be the underground darling track that all of these bands want to cover. So I thought that was a little bit interesting. On the original, there are some kind of inexplicable children's voice samplings that don't really seem to be saying anything relevant to the song. And it's a little bit unsettling considering that the chorus chants repeatedly, "I'll take your virgin soul." So, I don't know.
Negative
certainly,
implications there. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I would say it didn't age particularly well. And yet here we have 5 to 6 covers to choose from. So, like I said, White Zombie. There's something about the guitar tone on this one sounded a little bit like British Invasion. You know, it didn't really have like a strong, like really metal saturation. And I think that Rob's
very,
vocals,
I would say, almost indie-ish. Very minimalistic, spacey production style. It's good. It's just definitely, as you said, the least metal for sure, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I think we're kind of scratching at the same sensibility here. But if you consider White Zombie's catalog is definitely, you know, alt metal in many regards, you know, sure. That
I think it's the best version, arguably, as far as hitting the tone with their equal use of samples. And I think Rob Zombie hamming it up, it plays right into, you know,
it is kind of Kiss, isn't
what
it?
What makes Kiss Kiss. He nails certain aspects of this song. Nails it.
Yeah, the problem is I never want to listen to this track again. While I can sort of come along with you on some of that sentiments, this is going to be the last time that I listen to this song.
I had the same feeling once. I listened to it twice, and that's twice too many.
That's kind of how I felt about the original, let's be real. But
all right, so let's go ahead and chat about the Death cover. Like I said, it came out as a deluxe version from Human from 1991. This is kind of the God lineup from Death, in my opinion. Yeah. At that time they had Paul Masdevall as well as Sean Reinert
and Steve fucking DeGiorgio.
I said it right that time. Masvidal, right?
Yes.
Masvidal.
Masvidal.
Yes.
I notoriously said that incorrectly a few times. So, Paul, I got you this time. Respect.
I got you.
I would say that this is the most faithful cover, which is sort of ironic in so many ways, considering A, the musical talent that they had at their disposal, considering all the people who were in this lineup at this point in time, and also what an explorative record Human was. Maybe this was kind of, I don't know, the release from all of that, that they just wanted to play something kind of fun and pretty much to the T of the original, minus the sampling, including Chuck's vocals sort of holding his rasp out to mask what Gene is doing with his sustain. Overall, it's, you know, a fun one to listen to, but like I said, being faithful doesn't always mean that it's the best, in my opinion. I tend to like it when an artist has a little bit more interpretation or seems to have a little bit more purpose with their cover than this one. What do you think?
I mean, you're probably right on that. When it comes to the death version of this song, I kind of think the vocals do it a disservice, just because Chuck, obviously being in a death metal band, it's corny in the wrong way for a song that's already corny, you know?
Do you think that this era of his vocals in particular are worse? Because I often think that maybe if he did more of the Sound of Perseverance, like shrill thing, then maybe, I don't know. I tend to just like his vocal stylings there better. I think actually maybe this was the worst. He was sort of in his transitionary period from like his early guttural. Like I would have maybe liked to see them do the Scream Bloody Gore era. Maybe that would have been better, more appropriate.
Or even change his vocal style. I mean, clearly he's open to do it. He already did it on Painkiller. And you look at Exhumed. Exhumed totally changed their vocal style for this cover.
Yeah.
So it's not like bands haven't been able to do it for this song, and not like he wasn't willing to previously.
Okay, fair enough. Well, if that's the case, then I sort of agree that if Chuck's reluctance to maybe make an adjustment, then this is just a cover that they potentially were jamming out on, and they said, hey, you know what, we could probably lay that down, and it ended up as a bonus track, which sometimes that works out, and when you have such masterpieces as Lack of Comprehension, then I don't blame them for wanting to just play something that might have been a little bit fun.
A little fun, easier. Yeah. I just cover a lot, as Mr. Bog mentioned, when I first heard it, I realized it was a Kiss song. I had a look at it. Oh, it's good. Kiss could write a good... People can cover Kiss and make it good. But I like this one a lot, especially Chuck's vocals, obviously, because it's very harsher compared to Gene Simmons' vocal performance, for obvious reasons. But I would probably say this one's my favorite overall, to be honest. Maybe just the nostalgia factor in it. But I like this one a lot. So...
All right, so number three up, we have Iced Earth, or as we're going to refer them on the podcast henceforth, Insurrection Earth, if you're keeping up
still,
with the news.
I'll still refer to them as Iced Earth. So,
so they did a whole album, and it wasn't particularly early on, but Richard, remind me the name. It was Tribute to the Metal Gods.
It's from 2002, Tribute to the Gods. They cover Kiss, AC/DC, Alice Cooper, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest. This is the classic era with Barlow and John Schaefer, and the best era of the band. So if you want to hear classic Iced Earth ripping some great classic hard rock metal songs, I would highly recommend this album, tribute album.
I really want to go back and listen to it, because if it sounds as good as this track does, the guitar tone here is spot on. Yes. They embellish it in all the right moments by adding little interesting background, you know, shredding and leads. There's a lot of interesting backing vocal tracks. This is such a rich interpretation of the original. They throw aside all of the bizarre sampling that's featured in the original. Overall, I'm a huge fan of this track. This, I will say, is the Iced Earth one is my favorite cover of this song of the three that we have here today.
Yeah, it's good. It's hard not to agree that it's not the best, just because it takes it the most seriously. Although I do think the White Zombie version is maybe the most on the nose as far as nailing the original tone of the original, though.
Yeah, again, it doesn't make it doesn't make it endearing, I think. I said that I think it was the most interesting. I will listen to this Iced Earth version again, and I'm probably going to listen to the rest of that album.
No, it's good shit.
Yeah.
And I like this version a lot. I mean, I'm very biased towards the Matt Barlow era of the band, but some of the death cover just kind of gives it slight edge, but this was a very close second. Very fucking close second.
It's kind of interesting. It seems like we're a little bit divided on this one, whereas in the past we have resoundingly either all picked between one or two versions of it. So what does that say about the original, that this can be interpreted in different ways, that it's got enough legs that it offers different perspectives on it. Am I giving KISS way too much credit here?
Yeah, yes. I'm going to go with it. Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's take a shot of cold gin and move on to the next segment here,
110%.
Boys.
110%. You wouldn't dare take a shot of cold gin.
If you had one for me, I'd do it.
I have one.
I took
right
one
now.
Earlier. If we could stop and go get one.
You really want to take a shot of cold gin?
Do it, man. Let's do it.
All right.
Can we listen to cold? I'm going to put on cold gin while we take it, though, okay?
All right. You have to do it right now. Here all we right. go. Last thing we're going to be talking about today on this episode of the podcast is the return of Mordor Metal Monthly, which is our monthly look in at a different Tolkien-themed band that either takes their name or takes a lot of their music and lyrical themes derived from the work of J.R.R. Tolkien and his romps through Middle-earth.
Romps.
And this month, shut up, Richard. This month, we're focusing in on Orcrist. And which now, some of you
I maybe, thought was Orc Fist. I might add, I guess P and I. When I first saw,
I thought it was
Oak
Fist when
Fist.
I first read this. I had to ask for the link because I kept typing this in incorrectly so many times. Orcrist, Orkrist.
Yes,
do not
Orcrist.
Make the same mistake that I did.
Yes, indeed, Orcrist. Orcrist is the Slovak name of Orcrist, which is the exact same word, just spelled with a C instead of a K. This band being from Bratislava. The name Orcrist is actually the name of the sword wielded by the dwarf named Thorin Oakenshield. You may remember that name from the Hobbit trilogy that was recently made into film by Peter Jackson, the same guy who did the super popular New Line Cinema trilogy, Lord of the Rings.
They're pretty good, I guess.
Pretty good. Anyway, if diving further into the dorkery, Orcrist is actually dwarvish for Goblin Cleaver. So that
yes.
is actually the true name of the band, is Goblin Cleaver. The Slovakian Cleaver. Translation of a dwarvish word, which means Goblin Cleaver.
I think we're going to go hashtag globalism on this one as well.
Goddamn.
Hashtag
Cleaver,
Middle
not
Earth
Cleaver. Cleaver.
Cleaver.
Like a meat cleaver.
Sorry, it's the cold gin. Anyway,
Goblin Cleaver is a pretty cool name.
I would say so.
Yes.
They only have three records. Only have three records. Regine, Mysterium, Grand, and Artifacts of Life. The first coming out 2002. The second coming out very rapidly 2003. And then there would be an extremely long 17-year wait until Artifacts of Life, which was released just last year. Now, on the surface, you might be forgiven for describing this band as just a cross between Haggard and Nightwish. But upon deeper inspection, which is the whole point of this fucking segment, gentlemen,
God damn it.
Would you not agree that there is a mighty fine band to be found beneath the cover or two, perhaps three, of Tolkien-themed nonsense?
Duel, you said something like, you know, if you look past the sort of LARPy part of this, you come to find that there's actually some technical mastership here. And I think that the keys, the harpsichord most specifically in that, how that's used in conjunction with basically the woman's voice in this, I think was actually done really well. Better,
the beauty
better
and
than
the
I
beast
certainly
vocals,
could have
I mean,
yes,
they're done
the
to perfection here.
Yes.
I mean, unfortunately, that's part of a formula. And a lot of this genre, that kind of gothic power metal, is so formulaic. But they do the formula so well that I can almost forgive them for it.
Yeah. I really enjoy the keys. Like, the keys are well done on Grand and Artifacts Life. I did get around the first record, but at least I got to it. I love the keys and the flute, which some I haven't heard in a lot of power metal. I thought was really well done, too, as that very atmospheric Tolkienian sense.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by Tolkienian sense as far as musically. I'm not sure.
It's
more
the vibe, the atmosphere, because obviously the name's Lord of the Rings, but
was
the
there
Rings
something
based.
In particular that gave it that fucking Hobbit pipe weed smoking in the Hobbit sure fucking vibe to you? Or maybe some like orcs?
I think to me, frankly, it's, you know, this is a folk metal band at the end of the day. I think that it, you know, we ascribe certain characteristics to folk music, and I think that a lot of the times those same elements are co-opted by fantasy soundtracks. And I think that Lord
is
of the
Nightwish a folk metal band?
Maybe they're really shit. Maybe I've never listened to it. Honestly,
I mean, it's not I'm not a scholar on Nightwish. Again, wish DBO was here to weigh in on this.
I mean, I'm pretty big Nightwish fan myself, at least the old school days. I mean, they're
do they have harpsichord and flute?
Yeah.
Probably then.
Like, honestly, this
I would say
band,
no.
Do you think that Orcharis is not a folk metal band?
No.
Really? Okay.
I would say they're much more of a power metal band. They have some of the folk metal influence for sure, but power metal first and foremost. The fantasy element, the Beauty and the Beast vocals, I mean, like symphonic power metal, 110%. Like, have you heard Haggard before either?
No.
I have not. I've never heard Haggard till you mentioned.
Okay, so I mentioned both Haggard and Nightwish, two bands that both of you are not familiar with.
Nightwish I know, but Haggard I'd never heard up till you said something about them.
Bog, you should listen to Nemo, that album from Nightwish. And then you should listen to Thou Shalt Trust the Seer from Haggard.
Say the album title one more time.
Thou Shalt Trust the Seer, okay. S-E-E-R, from Haggard.
Honestly, this...
track, De La Morte Noir. Four, I think it's called.
This amazing band, Orcharis, reminded me a lot of like Old The Gathering or even a band, I believe they're from Finland, Theaters of Tragedy. Kind of the same thing, gothic-y, Beauty and the Beast type stuff. But it's been reminding me a lot of that, you know, minus, you know, the flutes and all that and that stuff. But really good shit. And I looked up, they actually have the same members. But for a band around 20 years, having the same lineups, pretty not that common, honestly.
All right, listeners, full disclosure here. We recorded this episode previously, but it unfortunately was not put to tape scandalously. So I think we have enough leeway that we're going to put this on pause. And we have to show Barkovich some Nightwish here. You really
not Haggard?
Both. We're going to show you both. Like
It is nine. Are we going to get
Is Haggard like a mellow death band?
I want you to at least have some context here.
Well, hold on. An uneducated context is probably reflective of what many of our viewers are going to be coming, or listeners. I just said viewers.
All right, you know what? You're right. I'm not going to edit this out, and I'm going to say he's right, but I'm going to ask that you
promise
to listen.
Put it in the Slack channel.
Both those bands, both those albums, and revisit your comments.
About them being folk metal? Is that the rub here?
I want you to revisit your comments on Orcharis after you listen to both of those bands.
Okay.
Honestly, the only
and tell me that you
that
don't
has.
Feel that they loom large in
as
their influential sphere.
The only band I've heard that has flutes has been LOA from Switzerland, who's a folk metal band, minus this band, solo other band listed.
Ellie Vitti? Is that who we're talking about here? No one seems to.
I thought it was LOA.
No one ever seems to land on the pronunciation.
Yeah, there's like three different pronunciations. I called it LOA, then it's pronounced LOA.
It's supposed to be some like high elvish shit.
Yeah, yeah.
They are also a candidate for Tolkien, a Mordor Metal Monthly.
Now, did you guys ever do the sync with Braveheart? And then, I can't remember, it was like their third album. It was the one that has Blood Soaked Earth as like the lead single. You can sync like a portion of Braveheart to it. I did that shit a couple of times back when I used to smoke weed.
No.
Kind of like, what's
I do
Dark
remember
Side
taking
the Moon
Research
and,
Chemicals
the Wizard of Oz.
And syncing up Slayer's World Painted Blood album with the Happy Tree Friends DVD anthology, and that was sick.
Yeah.
World Painted Blood. Like, half that record is great Slayer, and the other half that record is just generic as fuck Slayer. It's a perfect 50-50.
It's so cheeseball generic Slayer that it's amazing. There's nothing wrong with
like,
the record.
Like,
I love
World
every
Painted
song
Blood.
On there.
Duel, I'm going to mention this because one of the best syncs that I ever did myself in my own exploration, because it's the kind of shit that I used to do, was you can sync pretty much all of Deloused and the Comatorium from the Mars Volta with Nosferatu, the original one.
I did a Mars Volta themed sync with my ex-girlfriend at the time, who was a huge Mars Volta devotee.
I've heard a lot of good shit about that band. I actually listened to them, though.
And then my roommate, she put out her own vocal cover of Asilos Magdalena. Still to this day, my favorite of the Mars Volta tracks, because it is the most evil.
Evil?
Great band. Not metal, but
Yeah, yeah. If you read the lyrics, it's all in Spanish. It's about a guy who, I guess, made a deal with the devil, but his wife or girlfriend or whatever still died. Or he made a deal with God, I guess.
Oh, no.
And said that he would come back to God if he would heal his wife and or girlfriend. So his girlfriend dies, and he talks about how I was there in the rain, like, you know, yelling up at you when you promised me your blood. And at the end of the day, he didn't come through for me. So it goes to this narrative. And at the end of the song, he says, Estrella de la mañana, like son of the morning, Lucifer, Samael te persigo a ti, Samael, I'll follow you. And it's the most evil shit ever to hear him talk about this. I'm mad at you, God, to fuck you. I worship Satan. In this really beautiful
it's nice
acoustic.
That it is beautiful and it's very subtle. They also have a song called like Sign of the Baphomet, like on that same
album. Day of the Baphomet.
Is that what it is? Day.
I've got a prayer that
which is,
make
has
you
one of the best bass
now.
Intros ever. If you never listened to that shit, Richard, you would probably get off on it.
I've also check them out, recommend the album and Slack. I'll check it out.
But you love the Comatorium. Just start with the first one. It never gets better than that. But
okay. Going back to Orcris, I actually looked up some of the meanings behind the tracks.
Pornographic prog rock, sir.
Gronde, their second record, is also known as the Wolf's Head, and was a 100-foot-long battery ram with the head and shape of a raven wolf, and it was through Morgoth's Warhammer. It was created in the likeness of Angban Karkoth. I'm not deep in the Tolkienian lore, so I don't know what any of that shit is. Another song is called Mundberg, and it's based on the mounds of Mundberg, which are
do you remember from the Return of the King when they're the orcs are sieging Minas Tirith?
Yes.
And they have that wolf shaped battering ram.
I never noticed.
That's hollowed out on fire, so it's like the wolf is breathing fire.
Of course they do. That's the one when Pippin asks Gandalf about what it's like in the afterlife, right?
One where Gandalf is like, "You are men of Gondor. You will stand your ground." And that fucking troll, fucking Jason Statham, like kicks through the front door, and he's like, "Oh shit!"
Like, more emotional parts of that movie.
Maybe I'll take that back in a second. You could take
the Mounds of Mundberg was the collective burial place of those that was slain in the Battle of the Pelennor Field for the armies of Gondor and Rohan, of which the subject is the Song of the Mounds of Mundberg. Also, another track, Glamdring, also called the Foehammer Beater, was a hand-and-a-half sword forged for Turgon, the Elven King.
I love the
Tolkien
geekery coming out here. This
the Elven King of Gondolin during the First Age, which was much later owned by Gandalf himself. And the final track I could find some meaning behind was, I believe it's called The Fall of Gil-galad. And Gil-galad was a Noldorian elf and son to Fingon. He was the last High King of the Noldor in Middle-earth. He had many titles, including the High King, Elves of the West, some others, but he was...
Elves of the East thought he was a cunt.
He was... formed the last alliance of elves and men with Elendil and led the elves to war against Sauron during this time. His death marked the end of the Noldorian kingdoms in Middle-earth, though many Noldor elves would still dwell in Imladris later throughout the Third Age.
Citation disputed.
And I got this from the one wiki to rule them all, which is the massive Lord of the Rings wiki. So I got this from a credible source.
It's got to be the heaviest wiki on the internet, I feel like.
It's a lot of stuff.
Only the Star Trek wiki is maybe heavier.
Read by leftist cucks. Honestly, you can't trust anything that's posted.
I mean, most nerds, I figure, are fairly left-leaning, so it's not going to be that shocking. But honestly, I've read Fellowship of the Ring, I've read The Hobbit, but this has been my biggest barrier into getting Tolkienian stuff, minus the movies.
I need to up my sarcasm level because it's clearly zero.
because the shit's so fucking dense.
Imbued is what it's,
the shit's dense as fuck. I mean,
I read the books when I was a teenager, you know, and even still really getting into it is intimidating, which is why the fact that there is a canon of bands that have taken like the extended world of this and internalized it. And
actually let's take this back. Let's not pretend like you didn't shit on all this. Like you didn't even realize that there was this huge swath of just the metal community in general that loved this.
I was a little ignorant. Ignorant.
You were.
Ignorant.
Definitely.
That well, Malibu's past, most though, wanted term.
This time.
I thought just because we was from the hood, we ignorant or something?
Yeah. I'm from California.
California.
Was that not one of your favorite movies growing up?
It's like my most
Boys in the Hood?
Favorite movie.
Because it was mine.
Either they don't know, or they don't show, or don't care what's going on in the hood. Ice Cube.
And on that note, I think we should fuck off. Unless you have any parting nuggets of wisdom.
Richard, listen to De-Loused in the Comatorium. It's the first Mars Volta record. De-Loused,
Comatorium, Mars Volta, first record.
Bogovic, you should listen to Nemo from Nightwish and Thou Shalt Trust the Seer from Haggard.
All right, heard that.
Ain't none you fucks got a recommendation for me? All right, I see how it is.
Asphyx's second record, Last One on Earth. Is cleaner production, the first some of their earlier records, and has some of their best songs, including M.S. Bismarck and the title track, one of the best songs the band ever wrote.
So you know what, Duel? If you've never given it a real listen to, check out Halo of Blood from Children of Bodom. It's like their later era.
We did a faux deep dive.
It's like 2008, 2010 era.
You and I basically did all the research for a deep dive as far as listening to their discography and Under the Knife, and then we just never did it, and it just turned into a top 10 list. I've heard it.
Okay,
I'll have to go back and listen to it again. I mean, I've forgotten it. There's nothing specific I can bring to mind about it.
It's not memorable.
It's just when it comes to like Yngwie Malmsteen worship or anything regarding Yngwie, like that can kind of run together.
They moved so far away from that. The first one I can come along with you, but they were so thrash metal at that point in their career. It was like Alexei's vocals. It was some weird amalgam of like empowered blackened thrash. Like I'm not even sure how to ascribe what musical genre they sat in. Everyone used to call them death metal when I was growing up, which, like, I've come to...
Children, no.
In hindsight, is no. Laughable.
Like laughable, maybe melodic death metal elements, but death metal straight
black
up.
Black and melodic thrash metal or something like that, you know?
They occupied such a unique space, and it's only now that he's gone that we acknowledge where they were,
Look back at hindsight. Because I remember...
I know, I definitely took them for granted. I should go back and... Like, they'll become one of my favorite bands in 5 years. Watch. I was like, I never knew what I had.
I believe it was
Follow the Reaper. I should have stand them 10 years before.
Follow the Reaper 2004. A buddy of mine at the time was really big into them, and I was just kind of getting into extreme metal, and then I was like, oh! He says, you check this band out, Children of Bodom, Follow the Reaper. You know, it's thrashy, you know, it's great guitar playing, extreme vocals, and it just didn't click. For whatever reason, I don't know why. And I know his guitar playing was one of a kind. And I was like, I would say before David Davidson became a thing, like Lexi was the shredder of this modern generation until David Davidson usurped his throne, just being a more diverse player. So, but either way you look at it, even though I was never the biggest fan or really got it, it's still a big loss for the community as a whole, truly. So, though apparently the EP, the Bodom After Midnight EP is still coming out. I believe in April, if I remember right.
I hope so. I want to.
You know, it's coming out. Rattle, it was recorded so before he died. It was all done. So at least his last bit of music that he put out on this earth shall be released posthumously. So I guess that's the small silver lining in it all.
Silver lining indeed. Not to put a stop to proceedings or anything, but that's exactly what I'm fucking doing. That's going to be about it for us today. At the Fundamentalist Podcast. Thank you all for joining us. Peter Bogg, thank you.
Nobody has any hot takes on Slayer's later career and whether or not South of Heaven is better or worse than some of the later proceedings that we want to get into right now.
Cletus, do you have anything last words? I didn't think
so. South of Heaven's better than most of Slayer's latter day material. That goes without fucking saying. Some of fucking Dave's fills and that shit's fucking quality shit. Stay safe out there. Snow's bad. Fuck snow. People say snow's magical. Snow's full of shit. Fuck snow. That's all I gotta say. Fuck snow.
Guten Abend. Tschüss.